get down to whatever business is. Who is here?
All right, I would. It's easier for me, I think, to mention everybody than for everyone to have awkward pauses. We have Doc, you're here. Joe Andrew is here. Drummond Reed is here. Chris Carfee is here. Dan Miller is here. And Ty Graham, in his first appearance, is here. And this is Dean, and I'm here.
Good. Excellent. Excellent.
I'd like to start off by reading some email that came in and let you just to inform people of it. First thing is from Deb Schultz regarding Supernova. She has 2 points she wanted to make about ways we can participate. Point one, is there be an entire track on the challenge day devoted to the changing nature of marketing and markets? And she feels that would be perfect for VRM discussions, and she says that she and Kevin would like you, Doc, to participate in one of those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is she would like to have a second VRM, Project VRM face, what does it say? Have a second Project VRM face-to-face as part of the unconference day, which is the day before the official conference starts.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And this is Chris. I actually had dinner with Kevin last night here in the Bay Area, and he explicitly reiterated both of those points. So,
yeah. Okay. That sounds fine. I have to say that the it's still interesting to me. I see going to these conferences as kind of a hermit crab operation, right? And I, all due respect to Deb, who's working with Kevin, and to Kevin, who's putting this thing on, and to the market for these kinds of conferences, which still exists. I'm fairly confident that once Kevin puts the program together, none of us are going to be mentioned among the speakers, and VRM will get, you know, kind of like a minor treatment, which is okay. I want to take advantage of that, and maybe we don't deserve more than that yet. But... you know, I feel like what we're going to do exceeds what any of the speakers are going to talk about. And so that's cool. But I just feel a need to say that for what it's worth.
All right. Well, having the presence, though, certainly can't hurt.
Absolutely not. No. No.
And Doc, you're attending, right?
Sure.
And will you be there a day early?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right, so in effect, we can do everything she's asking, and you know, I don't think that that's, you know, if nothing else, it gives us another location. If there's a place to connect with some people who otherwise couldn't either join a call or aren't of a mind to write into the wiki or the blog, I mean, it's an opportunity to make connections. I think that's a good thing.
Right, right. So I see. I'm looking at their challenge day. I see the Wharton West campus. I guess they'll add what she talked about there. They've got investing in entrepreneurship in the new environment, web tools, making computers smart, copyright and social media, better broadband, and virtual life or virtual hype. Okay. Well.
All right, let me move on to item two.
Okay.
Which is,
before you do, Dean.
Yes.
I would just like to invite people to go to the wiki if you can. In particular, I'm keeping notes as we go, and I've already probably got some errors on attendees. So if you edit by sections, that probably won't overlap with me, so feel free to keep that up to date as we go.
Okay.
Okay. Of course, that requires using my hands and my mouth and thinking all at the same time.
Where are you keeping them, Joe?
They're under meeting notes. 2007-03-21 on the wiki. And actually, the best way to get there is going to be to go to the community portal site, and there's a link.
Okay, that's what I meant. Yeah, okay, the community portal page. Gotcha. Gotcha. All right, there it is. Wow. Rocking. Very good.
So I'll be regularly saving that as we go, so feel free to keep an eye on it in case you have time.
Right, okay. Oh, good. You've got
I believe I heard someone else
going
join us.
Here. That's very good.
Is someone else here?
This is Paul Trevithick.
Paul, how are you?
Paul, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Good. So,
all right, let me move on to the second.
Second email you got.
Second email note. And actually, which page did you say it was on, Joe?
If you go to Community Portal and then you look down, you'll see today's date under Meeting Notes.
Gotcha.
I'm hearing these mentions, this Drummond, of Community Portal. Is that referring to something different than the wiki? Or
on the wiki on the left, if you look just below the little Harvard logo.
Over there. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. One thing I don't know how to do, and if anybody anybody is capable of doing this on the who understands some of what we'll call the more standard coding of the wiki, is I would love to make where it says navigation to put different colors, main page, community portal, events, interesting links. I think colors would be really helpful there.
I don't think that's doable. Is it, Joe?
I don't know, actually. It might be.
I think that breaks the simplicity rule of the wiki thing. But I know with other wiki systems you can. I don't think with this one you can. But I may be wrong.
Okay. All right. Now, Ian sent me a note, and Ian has a very interesting point, and I think his point I'll read it, and I want to second it as I read it. He can't make the call. He's going to be on the train. He says, the only comment I'd make at this stage would be a desire to see, I have such an urge to read this with his accent. Of course, he would think, what accent? Would be a desire to see a second project up and running or clarity on the process through which we might do so. Now, listen to this point he makes, which is really interesting. The radio project does not really have much relevance in Europe so far as I am aware. The issues are not the same in that industry over here. I think an important point. Then he says, I'm happy to take the lead on a project that relates to personal information and VRM. That is the space of most interest to me. I logged an initiative around that on the wiki a while back, although that one is big and wide, so maybe I need to come up with a smaller bite-sized chunk, e.g., customers making cross-organization purchase data available to preferred suppliers, as Witt blogged about earlier in the week. I could have a prototype of that up and running before the May 14th event, if that would be useful, he says.
That'd be great.
Yeah, I think I just really thought that this was so good and so helpful. I mean, he's right about the fact that what we consider public media is a whole different ball of wax across the sea. It's different everywhere else but here. You know, ours is a bit unique in that case. And so it won't get certain traction elsewhere unless people are really understanding of it. But his point about needing something else is good, and then what he's offering, I think, is really excellent. I mean, it takes the heart of what we're talking about and, you know, gives it an action process. So I second Ian's effort here.
Could you reiterate what that proposal was? I was busy typing the first part of your comments and missed it.
I tell you what, Joe, I'll just forward the email to you, and then, you know, this way you can just put it on the wiki as such, okay?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, so he makes a really good point there, a couple of really good points. And in respect to the first one with the radio project, one reason why in that suit watch I made the point that there is a home for that project already, and it's not Project VRM, it's PubForge. So those, you know, the people who are in public radio already and trying to grapple with this problem and are, you know, have already been looking at it and welcome a VRM approach to it, have a venue already. And I like having it there rather than at Project VRM, so we can be an amen corner and help out as much as we can, but without necessarily running it. I think that what that needs now are developers who can hack something together and make things happen with our help to the degree that we can weigh in with that, and whoever we are, it may end up just being Dean and myself because we're old radio guys. Who knows? To his second point that he wants to work on this thing is just great, and I think he should do it. And I think I'm not sure he needs to make it more bite-sized because there may not have been that much reaction to what he put on the wiki in the first place. Things do tend to get lost in a wiki. But because he can get it done in time for the IAW, which would be really cool. With those two points made, I'd like to visit one that Joe and I talked about when we had a long second meeting after the last conference call here in Santa Barbara. And that was, we talked a lot about how, you know, how Project VRM would be structured and how we're going to deal with the larger outside world and also about what, you know, how we would work as a development organization and around particular development projects, looking at models in the open source development world, which are familiar to me, though I can't profess to knowing even more than a few of them, and less familiar to Joe because he's not been an open source developer too much yet, though he's becoming one. And, you know, so he's a developer, I'm not, and I've been in the open source world more than he has, but so we have nice synergy there. Anyway, the way I conceive it right now, and Joe, correct me if I'm misrepresenting the two of us thinking out loud together, I see the project. This is important for Drummond and for Paul too, because you're new to the call and Dan as well. You know, Project VRM is a project at Berkman that's frankly modeled after other projects that have gone and spun out from there in various forms in the past. Probably most relevantly, Creative Commons, though not identical to that. But Global Voices is another one, and probably Stop Badware will be another one. Hang on a second. I'm on the horn, but Joyce is right over there.
Well, I want to talk to you.
I can't talk for another half hour at least.
Well, okay.
Sorry, man. I'm on a conference call, sir. I've got to wear your T-shirt, though. It's our builder. Sorry. I'm at home. That's the hazard. And anyway, so Project VRM is a Berkman, is located at Berkman, but what Berkman likes to do is start things and let them go off. If their centrifugal force exceeds the gravitational force of Berkman itself, it's just great with them if things spin off in another direction. And if not, it's great to have had it there and for as long as it takes to make it do what it's going to do. But while we're still new, we're sort of a subset of Berkman. So there's a kind of an inner circle that's us and that's Project VRM, and it's the people who weigh in and participate, and that's the people on this call and who come to the meetings. And then there's this sort of larger circle that we have to kind of operate inside of, which is Berkman, and that's not a bad or a good thing, it's just a thing. And so, like, for example, we got to use their blogware, you know, we got to use the Berkman logo, we got to genuflect toward Harvard and shit like that. And it's not real hard and fast.
I know how to do that genuflect.
It's less a matter of it is amazing how informal things are at Harvard, you'd think, you know, but it's actually pretty almost goofy in some ways. I observed that, you know, having a Harvard blog is not especially distinguished when you look at all the other Harvard hosted blogs that are out there. They're more or less of the MySpacey type and don't reflect well on the university, I don't think. In any case, and then there's the third thing is there are all these other related projects that are already going on out there, and Paul with Higgins and Drummond with XRAXDI and iNames and the rest of it are two big ones, and a number of other related and overlapping projects around identity are also there. And this PubForge thing with public broadcasting is another. And these are ones we can't even begin to even think that we would want to control. All we can do is just kind of in a you know, sort of planetary gear kind of way, contribute some you know, some energy to. So what we want to do is keep, you know, is sort of, as Joe put it, we're, you know, we need to be sort of the authority on what VRM is and how it works, so we can help anybody who wants to do VRM-y things, but we can't really control these other outside projects. We really want to be helpful to them, but not necessarily, you know, run anything. So does that make sense?
I'm going to say yes. For the group.
Yeah, it makes sense to me, Doc. This is Drummond.
Okay, good. Good.
And as Chris, yeah, it makes sense to me too, and actually just spawned an idea that we might want to capture for later is, as we figure out exactly what VRM is, having some sort of kits that if somebody wanted to VRMify either a system or a, you know, a series of processes or a, you know, an organization, what does that mean to do that? So that when there are, you know, initially other projects at Berkman and then down the road, you know, other organizations, entities, projects out in the world at large, if they want to take what they're doing and make it VRMified, you know, here are the things that you can do once we figure out, you know, what it is.
Well, Joe was asking me some really good probing questions last week, and one of them was, and correct me again, Joe, if I'm wrong, that, you know, in its simplest form, you know, what is it? If I say we're doing one of those things, Chris, you know, what is it at its most fundamental, in its most fundamental way, what VRM is about? And I would say it comes from the user. It's for the user, and it comes from the user. It's not everything else is subordinated to the individual. And so you can't really take and it's not even centric. You know, it's not even user centric. It isn't taking an existing vendor based anything and making it more user centric. It is something that has to come from the user and work for the user primarily. And I'm sorry, what?
Oh, I was just loud and clear.
Yeah, and so and Joe made the point that this actually is a, you know, puts us in and puts me in particular, because it's sort of like the original articulator of this, and in a position of moral authorities, and I think that really is a way to put it. There's a practical side to it too, though, which is, and this is an interesting thing that I've observed about all the open source development efforts, which is that, you know, while there is a sort of a moral side to it, it's, you know, where you say that this is right and that's wrong. There's really a primary, not so much a dictator, but there's somebody in charge, you know, who basically says that, you know, like,
right.
And the one I know the most about is Linux and Linus Torvalds, and and in his case, a lot of it is just a sensibility, and that sensibility is one that embodies things like he has a general term he calls taste, and taste embodies, for example, not flaming along with having bug-free and non-complex code, and also leveraging as much as possible of what's already been done rather than reinventing any wheels that are already out there and not being so lazy or stupid that you don't know the wheels that are already out there.
Hey, Doc, there's another model, and I'm going to have to hop off in a second, but
okay, likewise.
It's not so morally tied in, but if you look at what's going on around Asterisk, which is just sort of a software PBX that has sort of a quasi-open source community around it, and Mark Spencer declared himself the arbiter of, like, what goes into the code
mm-hmm.
and what doesn't.
Mark is the Digium guy, right?
Yeah. That's, you know, that seems to be a pattern that emerges without, like, a lot of religion, well, quasi-religion attached.
Yeah, there's no religion there at all.
Yeah.
No. But
I saw a really interesting panel at South by Southwest last week that was around open source development sort of organizations, and it was something, it was a presentation I'd not seen before, but it really gave kind of a good background on how some of the projects are set up, that there is that sort of final arbiter, and almost think of it as a tree below, you know, that final arbiter, they're the people who can actually, you know, commit things to be officially part of the project. Those people look at the contributions from contributors who are part of the project, and there's actually a kind of a series of, I don't want to use the word casts, but I will, that sort of all flow through, that makes sure that everybody can contribute, and, you know, the more contributions, the more cred you have, the more responsibility you get within the community. It was kind of an interesting way of laying that out that I had not seen before.
The thing that gets me a little bit is you know, when the community is the developer community and the stamp of, or with Creative Commons, you know, authors or creative people, you know, there's a defined group there. When you use a term like the user or stuff that we're doing on behalf of you know, customers that are trying to manage vendors, you know, they you know, it's a group of people with a vested interest in creating an environment, if you will, but the big community that's going to benefit from it most may be totally passive. You know, they may just be beneficiaries. That's where I get a little confused.
Well, the confusing thing actually is around, you know, whether something is moral or practical, or in fact if those two are the same thing. I would say that in the open source communities that I know, that they are the same thing. There's not, you know, there's some talk about, you know, gift culture and stuff like that, but for the most part, the development communities are what I've characterized, and nobody has disagreed yet, as brutal meritocracies. You could be the best friends in the world, but if you can't produce the code, you don't have standing. I mean, it's just and your standing is entirely based on what you actually contribute. And
what I'm getting from Dan is a slightly different point, Doc.
Okay.
Which you might consider, say, the IT system at the DMV, and that the vast majority of people that's going to touch have no influence on designing that system.
Okay.
Is that where you're heading, Dan?
Yeah, and I think, you know, Doc's winging it. I mean, not
totally.
Like,
oh no, that's true.
No, but
that's true.
I meant in terms of like tangentially hitting on the issue. But then when I said Doc's winging it, that's apropos as well. But in a good way. but yeah, so there's some entity operating as a proxy for what is good and right for. You know, anybody that wants to manage vendors and that sort of thing, and start setting up a framework, if you will, that conforms with that. So I totally get that, and I think that's where we're operating. In a funny way, what I was talking about is, you know, it turns out to be a thankless job, because a lot of it, if it's done right, is transparent to the absolute beneficiaries, and that's probably cool as well. And then I was just sort of thinking, well, you know, let's say that this is all getting published in some Berkman internal resource, like the wiki, with it in mind that it builds enough gravitas to spin out and be a set of standards for, you know, this framework for the user experience. Then we end up where I think we ought to, which is it's something that service developers try to conform to, and there, you know, there's just sort of a set of practices, design criteria, that sort of thing that came out of here. So, I think I've satisfied my own sort of troublement by sort of verbalizing it. So I appreciate that.
Yeah,
I don't know if we're saying the same thing though.
No, I think we are. And part of what I'm wanting to do, and Joe pushed me nicely on this last week too, is get clear, you know, what my role is. I mean, I'm by habit and nature kind of a fire starter. You know, I like starting things and then stepping back a bit and seeing what catches, and then kind of fanning the flames if they catch, and walking off and starting some other fire somewhere else if nothing's going on over here, or coming back if it turns out that you know, it's a reignite of some sort, you know, where it's been kind of an ember that's flared up. But in this case, you know, this is something a bit more serious, and I need to, you know, we need a ship, and I need to put my hand on the tiller and get clear, you know, what my role here is. And an interesting thing is no two open source projects are exactly the same or even close. And on top of that, this is not an open source project. Or though maybe if one happens here, then, you know, my guess is that I would much rather see what, you know, what Chris or Drummond or Paul or any of the rest of you are doing, gets in, you know, and Joe and the rest of you are doing or get supported in a way where it's you know, it makes the most, it becomes VRM-y, you know, it does what we want VRM to do, you know, and that's, if we achieve that, it's great, you know. But it's a bit of a, you know, it's just an interesting question for me where, you know, how I can be most effective and where I want to take the project, especially if we get it funded. I mean, this is going to happen. In fact, I just got a commitment of a small amount of money from an unexpected source the day before yesterday. I can't go into it yet, who it's going to be yet, but it's not important at all, but it's nobody who's on this call or that we've even talked about before, but it just kind of came out of the blue. And the question is going to be what are we going to do, and how do we want to use the money, or how do we want Berkman to use the money? Is it, you know, what Berkman's done before is, well, let's hold some events, let's publish a document, let's do something else like that, you know, let's bring in some, let's pay some students on the side to do a bunch of research, which is what Stop Badware does. You know, they've got a room full of student geeks that are looking across the web for bad things happening, and then, creating notifications and things like that. So, I don't know yet, but I think we need to visit that at some point. I mean, a question would be, you know, how could we help what any of you guys that are developing something already do? And maybe it's what Chris said. Maybe there's some kind of standards and practices and kind of thing we could provide.
Hi, this is Ty with Blip. I was curious, you know, what kind of uses would the average consumer, you know, do in terms of VRM? Because I've came at it from an outsider's perspective, and I still don't quite understand what is the main objective for the average, you know, person going on, let's say, the internet.
Well, anybody else want to tackle that before I do? Because I'm kind of curious what anybody else is saying.
I nominate Chris because I think, Chris, you stated with you're the most succinct among us.
Chris,
do we lose you? That's succinct for you, isn't it? I think we lost Chris. You there, buddy?
No,
okay,
he did comment that he needed to leave early. Also, did one other person join us?
Okay, I'll give you what I hope is a succinct answer.
I'm curious to listen to Doc. So, Doc, this is your 30-second elevator pitch.
The number's much higher than that. I'm not sure I've gotten off the third floor, though, yet, so... we're not into double digits yet. The short answer is it allows consumers to be customers and not just consumers. A longer answer is it provides tools for both independence from vendor silos and engagement with vendors on the customer's terms. This is something, for the most part, none of us have ever experienced yet. So it's we're being idealists here. A good example that the people in the on this call on in the identity development area have been working on is what we might call is single sign-on and the ability to control your identity as you sign on to various things across the net. So, I mean, yesterday I was infuriated by what Yahoo put me through to stay engaged with Flickr. They basically broke the Flickr sign-in system and insisted everybody use their broken Yahoo sign-in system. And three times so far I've had to get myself a new password because the password that I chose didn't work anymore. In the last case, I went ahead and used their password, and their password didn't work anymore. I now believe that every time I go to Flickr, I'm going to have to sign in again and fail, get a new password, and go through a rigmarole. It's a pain in the ass. And the thing is, it's because they're maintaining a silo. And, you know, we should be able to not only sign into different sites on the web, but move past that. You know, I talking about average consumers, I have a cousin who's a really good use case for me because he says he doesn't like to use passwords at all. He says, I don't need a password when I go into the grocery store. I don't need a password when I walk into the corner market. Why should I need a password if I'm going to do business with people on the net? And this is a tough problem, but there are people on this call, in fact, that are doing a lot to solve that. And in this sense, VRM and the work that's been going on in the identity space completely overlaps. The difference is that where VRM goes that the identity guys are not going yet is what happens after you establish the relationship. Is it just that you're signing in, or is it that you're bringing something to the vendors that's a lot more than they're currently looking for?
Hey, Doc.
Because they're using what are called CRM systems that are very limited in what they allow the customer to do.
Hey, Doc. This is Paul.
Yeah.
Can I chime in with my...
Please, please.
So signing in is the least of it, right? What we want to be able to do is share the data, the metadata around the relationship between me and the site. Today, if you're on Best Buy and you want to save something into a wish list, it goes into the Best Buy wish list, which you can only get to if you sign in, and it doesn't move with you. In the future, a VRM wish list would live with you. And when you go on the site and say add to wish list, it adds to Doc's wish list. There's a kind of a concrete example of what I mean by both parties, the vendor and the customer, have mutual access to the data around that relationship. And another example is just projection, like we showed at June in the ID mashup. When I show up at a site, it should warp around me. It should express my preferences to the extent to which I'm willing to express those. And today on the Internet, there is virtually no personalization in terms of the first experience when you come to a website. It's a completely impersonal experience.
Yeah, this is Drummond. Paul's example of the your wish list that a site can respond to, even a site that you show up to for the first time, right? But if you have a customer, you have a VRM interface, and you show up at the site and either explicitly with one click or implicitly because of the nature of the trust relationship you have with that site, it has access to that wish list. I mean, it takes the whole notion of personalization and, you know, times 10. I mean, wouldn't it be incredible to go to sites and have them actually show you what you're really most interested in without you having to fill out any forms or anything? I was going to mention the thing I like about Paul's the portable independent wish list is that it takes the personal RFP concept and turns it into something that's actually practical in standard internet navigation. You don't have to build a separate infrastructure. It's just something that sites can accept. You know, think of it as a super smart cookie that you share with the site.
That's a great.
But isn't that just the feature of a website that can be implemented over time as, you know, their designers and UI experts make, you know, that experience of the site or the service better? To me, it would seem hard for, I guess, one organization to provide a service that all of these companies can leverage upon as a, let's say, personalization standard. And
but actually, that's a great question. The fact is that they architecturally can't do it because they're running their site. They're running their silos. They only have that slice of you, and their whole architecture is oriented around the data stored into your customer account. So the way the web...
I'd like to answer that a different way if I could.
But I like where you're going with that. Just continue before you jump in, Dean.
Okay.
Well, I was just saying that architecturally there is nothing that operates on behalf of the customer. There's no data store there other than a cookie, which is pretty pathetic, right? We've reached the point of the evolution of computers where a consumer gets up an opaque blob cookie that they can't even see, and that's the total of what a site can write about you back to you. So, and then as for the second part of the thing was, can one organization do it? you know, this is a revolution we're trying to start here, and you can start at the edges. And there are constituencies that want this to happen, probably more in the long tail side, and then it can grow virally.
Okay, go ahead, Dean. I just didn't want to. I wanted
no problem. Another point to be made that's an important point about this is that when we look at CRM, customer relationship management, there's no problem with Best Buy or Circuit City or any of these stores taking your wish list and, you know, you giving it to them if you so choose. But the idea here is that we're not creating a tool for Best Buy per se. We're creating a tool for those who wish to use sites such as Best Buy and so forth to say, I would like this. This is my wish list. And for the users to have the say over who can have that data. Best Buy collects that data not so much because they really care about you per se, but as a way to manage totally on their from their point of view how they can. It's a purely marketing tool. You know, it's not customer relationship management. It's specified marketing. You know, individual marketing, and you participate or you don't as a user. The idea is to have this to put this out with the control on the side of the user and user permissions, as opposed to only interacting on an individual basis. This is not to say that one precludes the other, which is an important point. There's no problem with doing both, but it gives the user choice. Also, if say you go to, and I really don't mean to damn Best Buy or Circuit City or any of these, because I don't necessarily know their policies. But say I go to a given store that's on the web, their website, and I say I'd like, a Framasquat, whatever that might be. Well, for the rest of my marketing life with them, I'm going to get hit with Framasquat email, or when I go to their site, Framasquat will appear somewhere on the site. This is irrelevant and wasteful, and it's kind of, you know, it makes my experience less beneficial. And it wastes their marketing time, but this is a matter of thinking they've got. By controlling this and being the person who puts this out, I'm frankly elevating their experience by them not wasting my time, and I'm elevating my own experience by deciding who I want to know about that. And so by vendor management, I manage the vendors by not having them waste my time. And I can give a better, a more solid example. And we've talked on other calls and we've talked in meetings about if I were to put out an RFP that I want to buy a car, I want to buy a new car and I want it to have certain features and, you know, I don't need this kind of wheel, but I do need that kind of wheel and blah, blah, blah. If I put that out and I control that and I also control the input, I only want it from car dealers within 50 miles of a certain zip code and I only want this and I only want that. I control that as opposed to now getting for the rest of my life spammed to death with new car or car sales emails and offers. Because frankly, if I say I'm going to buy a car and I'm going to, you know, I know I'm going to do that within 3 to 6 months. When 6 months has gone by, I no longer need all that mail. But a lot of CRM systems pay no attention to that. They see me forever as car buyer. So my point is that controlling the relationship is it's allowing users to put out the, you know. Put out, I mean, as in emanate and not as in turn off, to emanate the relationship and also to maintain a degree of control that I think it enhances both the buyer and the seller experience.
Well, from my, you know, interpretation of what both of you have said, I can name off two companies, you know, Amazon for one. You know, you can share your wish list with other people. You can create a wish list. And that experience from the customer level has been satisfied with what I hear you saying as, you know, what would be desired that the customer have for the best experience. For, you know, the car experience, I would say eBay. If you go to eBay Motors, you can select the car, you know, provide the location, and then choose which vendor you want to work with. So those two companies are very big companies, and it seems like what the VRM strategy in my mind is trying to do is create some sort of, like, rating system for how well that company is providing the best customer care or service or control factor, and if a development could be around, you know, how to compare these companies together, and then a customer can go in and find what they would like to do in terms of commerce based upon the rating system of whether those companies are doing what they can for the customer. then it seems that that's kind of what I'm interpreting VRM to be. I don't interpret it to be some sort of system that can be applied to other companies programmatically.
Why do you
Let me jump in here. So the problem, I don't think anybody on this call would say that either Amazon or maybe some might disagree with eBay, but let's say for now, nobody would disagree that Amazon or eBay are doing a great job at what they do. The problem is that in order to take advantage of what they do, you have to go into their silo, and they are silos. In this respect, they're very much like instant messaging still is. I mean, email is not in a silo. Instant messaging, if you're on AIM or you're on Microsoft Messenger or Yahoo's, there's some interoperability, but for the most part, it isn't there. What VRM is about is equipping the customer, the user, in the case of things that are not just commercial, with tools of independence from those things. Independence is one thing. Engagement is the other. We don't have independence now, and we have very limited terms for engagement that are entirely determined by the seller. So am I missing something there?
Yeah, because I'm not too familiar with all the jargon, like silos. So if I were to, as a customer, not know where to go in order to get certain, you know, things done, then where would I go if I didn't go to Amazon or if I didn't go to eBay? What kind of alternatives are you providing that kind of gets the point?
Well, the blunt answer is we aren't yet. You know, right now there are not. The alternative isn't there yet.
Yeah.
The idea is to develop tools that can be used. And I want to point out something that I would agree that Amazon, for one, does a very good job, and also does a very good job of giving the customer a degree of control over some, not all of the data that Amazon has. But I use Amazon pretty heavily, and I took a group of courses in the past 2 years on various subjects. I bought a lot of books on those subjects, and for the past week, Amazon has been telling me that there's new books I can buy on those subjects. Well, I've already taken those courses. So, I mean, to a degree it works, to a degree it doesn't. And the fact that I rather like Amazon and don't, silo though it may be, I don't really have I don't respond negatively. But I do see that, the data is, it's dated. And they've pigeonholed me as opposed to allowed me to say what I want when. They're still trying to sell me, I took a series of courses, they're still trying to sell me introductory stuff. And I'm beyond the introductory phase. The other point is that I think, Ty, you may be seeing this a little more as a specifically commercially operative endeavor than, I speak and feel free, anybody to correct me, is the goal of us as a group. We're not trying to enhance on a specific basis how someone wants to buy something, we'll go and buy it today. We're trying to develop tools so that people can control their experience and also so that vendors can participate in the experience, but in the experience as indicated by the wannabe buyer as opposed to various silos that think this is how it should be done. I'll stop now. I'd like others to comment if possible.
Yeah, Dean, I'd like to jump in there a minute. I realize that the V and VRM is vendor, but I think that a lot of the framing of this has been too limited to that sort of vendor-customer relationship. And I think that a lot of the power here that hasn't been really explored is the ability to extend this beyond into, let's just say, for lack of a better model, something along the lines of Craigslist. In the sense that one of the things that interests me about this whole area is the ability to have sort of a personal RFI, if you will, and that extends beyond just the traditional vendor customer relationship and into something that, you know, creates new vendors out of people. And if you insist on that kind of framing, but I think there's a huge potential here that. You know, I haven't heard really discussed yet, but I see it sort of lying there, and I wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, I agree with you on turning customers into, I guess, vendors themselves, and I'm coming at it from the advertising industry because Blip is a way of kind of taking the customer and saying, I'm going to remove the Procter & Gambles of the world, and I'm going to provide tools for the customer to do it yourself in terms of marketing their content, whether it's social media, television programs, et cetera, and then providing a way for those customers to accept other customers as advertisers within the content lineup that they choose. So when you provide all of that together, it seems that it comes out to something like a meta or semantic type of structure where you have all of these interactions going on with the customers themselves, exchanging data, exchanging dollars, and providing new discoveries for social media.
Well, I think it's more than just turning customers into vendors. I think it's there's a freedom aspect of it in terms of being able to as Doc points out, to carry your data around with you and determine how it's used yourself. So I think it's more about managing the conversation and how that takes place. That doesn't necessarily mean that I need to incorporate myself as an individual because I have certain interests. It just means that there's the ability, a mechanism that we're providing or making real in a way that people get to choose themselves how that happens.
I
think that's the important component.
If I could jump in here, there are actually two areas where users do have control architecturally right now. And one of the problems is that they don't necessarily provide any feedback whatsoever to the vendors, and that is client-side style sheets where you can overwrite the presentation locally. Now, only power users really plug that in, but you can override the font, and that's something you could enable in a publicly accepted projection so that the website could automatically respond to who you are and the fact that you like large fonts or you... whatever it is. But right now, the vendor doesn't know what your style sheet is doing.
Right, right. And there's another way. If you want to put it in terms of what are we talking about programmatically that would directly affect the consumer experience, you can conceive of it, and I think it's a fairly narrow conception, but it's still, a good one to use. Imagine there's a plugin for your browser that you could download where – And it's a standardized plugin, meaning it's not a proprietary, but it says we turn around and we provide the call it the VRM plugin, and websites and it's think of it again as like you're able to provide a whole bunch of standardized cookies to a website that say this is what I'm interested in, this is what you might want to know about me, and the interface for that plugin and the definition of those standard cookies would all be available to any site that said, oh man, I might want, if a user comes to my site with that plugin, I want to know those things about them. I can personalize my site. Think of it as doing for the rich part of relationships what we're trying to do for just the very simple aspect of single sign-on today. Because the identity infrastructure you're creating to support just the very obvious concept of single sign-on, not needing a separate username and password every place, is the core infrastructure you need to now go up to that much richer automated data and relationship exchange. I don't know about anyone else, but I personally believe such a plug-in if properly packaged and marketed, there would be a lot of sites, as Paul said, starting a long tail, but boy, it'd move up pretty fast.
Absolutely. In fact, there are things in what we're doing at Switchbook that sort of parallel that, although maybe not as broadly because we have a very specific focus. And the other example of user side isolated customization that I wanted to get in the conversation is GreaseMonkey. For those of you that don't know it, GreaseMonkey is a plugin for plugins in Firefox, which makes it very easy for people to write scripts that modify the HTML of a page based on the URL. So if you download a particular plugin, you can have it automatically do a bunch of stuff to a web page that gives you new functionality without the website owner having any idea that you're doing it. So the problem with these approaches is that they're architecturally isolated. There isn't any sort of communication or engagement back to the vendor so that they can understand how they can improve your process or how they can provide value. It's all the user sort of saying, look, the technology is here for me to hack it this way and to get what I want out of it. And I think VRM can go a long way to finding ways that are engaging vehicles to allow that sort of customer-centric customization.
So what it comes back to is, again, and this is, you know, me being trying to be the anchor on this thing. You know, we're talking about creating tools for independence from any one site. We can call that a silo if you want, and engagement. And as that was a really good point, I thought that Joe just made, that there are tools out there, but a lot of them are too isolated. They, you know, what we don't have either the technology or yet the sociology to support this, but we have a bunch of people who have gathered around the realization that we can make a lot of positive changes in the world if we locate our development around the user, start with the user, start with the customer in the case of vendor relationships, with the student in the case of university relationships. There was a good post a couple days ago I pointed to on the blog, I think, on the VRM Project VRM blog, where somebody read what we were talking about and said this is relevant in education. I've had people tell us it's relevant for churches. It's relevant for lots of other institutions. The V part of this gives us some original focus, but it's leverageable. The problem with just saying relationship management is it's almost too vague. It helps to have something specific that we can contradict later if you don't want to go that way with it. But what I'd like us to, I don't know if we have an agenda or not, but what I'd like us to look toward is what we want to do specifically around given projects and around events where we're going to meet and get together. I'd like to have some, as Ian already challenged himself, some challenges looking toward the Internet Identity Workshop, toward the, I hope Ian can get over to the Identity Open Space event in Brussels. By the way, I want to put in a plug up for that. I don't think anybody on this call is from Europe, but or can necessarily get over there. I'm going to get over there. We don't have many signups yet, and I need to publicize that.
What was the event again, Doug?
It's called Identity Open Space. If you go to my blog, there's a link on the left side. I think we definitely need to promote it. I heard from Phil Windley saying, okay, we got to, it's time to push this thing. So. Which I will do. I'm going to contact some people I know over there who can get to this thing. So, but there, I would like to look toward some of these events as landmarks for having some work that we're independently doing ready. Yeah, even if it's just to get to, you know, just to talk, you know, give progress reports of where we stand on things. A number of us are involved in development efforts, and if it's not anything more than saying, you know, here's where Higgins relates to this. Here's what we're doing with Higgins that's relevant to VRM, and see how we can push this thing further downstream. I think there are probably related efforts that we don't even know about right now that may also want to join in. But I want to look forward to some of these events as opportunities to get together and talk about some of this stuff face to face, or we've got a whiteboard, and we can get practical about making things happen.
You know, a couple of things that I would like to get on our to-do plate, Doc, in the vein of that and coming a bit out of our conversation last week. You just mentioned what I might call a map of related efforts. In other words, how do we fit
mm-hmm.
in the ecosystem that's already out there?
Right.
I think, you know, some sort of visual and some sort of narrative that explains that would be useful for a lot of folks.
Right.
Especially if we can present that within the context of the identity crowd and, you know, show how we plug into what's going on there at IIW.
Right, right.
And then you and I had also talked about how the how Linus manages focus within Linux. And of that what Linus does is really all about the kernel. And if it's in
right.
user space, that's not what he does.
Exactly, right.
And at VRM, all the clear value propositions are in the user space because we don't have well-defined what needs to be centralized into a quote-unquote kernel.
Right.
But we did identify some things that overlap so many of the user space opportunities we've been talking about that I think we can start mapping sort of what are some of the pieces that really need to be underlying infrastructure, i.e. in the kernel space. Obviously, identity is part of that, probably some sort of user-centric data management.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are different pieces like that, and I'd like to start fleshing that.
Those are really good points. And to expand, to give a little background for some of the rest of you to the context of this, this is probably true in other development environments and probably true in Unix in general, but there is in Linux this division of labors within the operating system between what's called kernel space, which is what the kernel modules themselves do, and user space, which is where you can add things in that's relevant to that's user facing, and that includes, you know, languages, all kinds of stuff. And what Linus often says is, when somebody says, well, why don't we have better Linux desktops yet? He'll say, well, that's user space. I don't deal with that. I deal with the kernel space. And what it serves, there's a conversational division between the stuff on which everybody depends, which is kernel space, and what happens on the other side of the dependencies, which is user space. And a lot of what happens in the kernel space is actually what's best for the kernel. What they're trying to do is not necessarily create a better device driver just for GPS devices, but rather if you add a device driver, it's got to not screw up everything else that's in the kernel. There's an old saying that the Quakers have that you don't speak unless you can improve on the silence. It's kind of like that. It's like don't add any code to this unless it actually improves the whole damn thing. And as it relates to us here in the conundrum that we've got that Joe just talked about is that we don't really have a kernel, and we do need to kind of develop one. What are the things that are what you want in VRM? As a matter of course, maybe a data store is one of them. Identity management is another, and there may be others as well. There may be aspects of relating that are we haven't even begun to explore yet, but we are going to need to formalize or help other people formalize. That makes sense to folks?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Good. Good. So,
I should point out that we are, it's going to be 2:40, and we need to wrap up relatively quickly.
Okay.
I also would like to, just for the sake of housekeeping, point out that we did have the site development discussion, which was Chris Carfee, Joe, Doc, and me, and that went well, and we are going to have that as that is going to be a continuing discussion. And it's kind of too soon to talk much about it, except that, you know, we have good beginnings.
We have good beginnings, and I have some homework that I've lollygagged on.
And the good news about a voluntary participation project like this is, you know, you don't get you don't get shock treatment or, you know, sent to the hole for for things of that sort.
I should add something really quickly. I have a tomorrow I'm going to be giving an online presentation on VRM to a class that's an online class that's worldwide for Hewlett-Packard, which has taken an interest in VRM. And I, of course, am totally unprepared. But if anybody feels like sending me some thoughts about that or what belongs in a slide deck that I will upload as a pile of pings, because they want that just because of, you know, just as an outline to focus things. I'd appreciate that. No need or anything, but it'll help focus me. So.
And I guess you don't need anything to the effect about giving out people's phone numbers or things
no.
of that sort. I couldn't resist. I'm sorry.
So if we could, I'd like to review our outstanding action items and see if we picked any up for this week.
Go ahead, Joe.
So from last week, we had, we have a perennial action item that I think I'm worried what we should do with, which is integrate OpenID on the wiki.
Right.
Which has David's name on it, and David's never been around to accept that action item, and I expect that that's why we haven't made progress with it.
Oh, we have Jabber happening, by the way. It's in the works, I should add.
Okay, so that's a great update.
Yeah. I should have said that earlier. I brought it up with Hal Roberts at the Berkman Center. He said, you know what? I've never set up a Jabber service. He contacted the bunch of guys that are in what is known as the Geek Cave at Berkman, and they immediately jumped out and said, God, we've wanted to do this for a long time. Let's do it. So we're doing it. And as soon as it's ready, I'll let you know.
Okay. Very good. And we do have a group blog. Did we figure out how to get multiple authors in?
No, we haven't. That's still on my plate.
Okay.
We do need to figure that out.
And did we get a vision statement, Doc? A VRM definition or vision statement?
We're getting closer, I guess.
Which I just want to point out what would have been very helpful earlier in this call. And so, I mean, we really do appreciate the need for this. And I would just say, in Doc's defense, the real difficulty in it as well.
Right.
Yeah, it is. It's hard. Harder than I thought. It's good.
I agree with that. Now, we also have an ongoing initiative or an ongoing action item to create new initiatives. I think actually where we are with that is that, as Ian pointed out, I think we need to provide some structure or activation. We need to take some of those initiatives and turn them into those brainstorms and turn them into real initiatives. And I guess I want to talk offline with you, Doc, about what PubForge means for the Public Radio Initiative.
Right. And I need to get in touch with those guys. I was going to do that today, and I haven't done it yet. So,
Possible, if you guys don't do that in person, if that's a phone call, I'd like to be on that call.
Sure.
Okay.
I just know we're running out of time here, or I'd dive in.
Right. I want to be sure that we have Drummond and Paul, I think, for the first time, maybe some others. Is this working for you so far?
Well, this is Drummond. I explained, Doc, that I have not – the Thursday time slot falls right in the middle of the weekly XRI-XDI technical committee meeting.
Right.
And we got folks all over the world that, you know, that are, so I can't move that time slot, and I co-chair it. I can't –
No, actually, by work, I wasn't talking about time-wise. I was talking about content-wise.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's some, you know, really good topics here, you know, as the drive to build software that and systems that – you know, makes this possible. We're, you know, it's what I do. And it's a large part of what Paul's doing. So that's why we're here.
You still here, Paul? We may have lost Paul.
So we already gave a quick report on the website bit, and Chris did, in fact, send out the reference to the bullwhip effect. So that was done. Any other action items we created this week?
I got that email from Chris as well. Can someone put that on the wiki as a reference point?
Yeah, let me put that in here. Do you want to do that?
Oh, no, because every time I try and make a link, I end up asking you for help.
All right, I'll pick that up. And I'll have that done by next Wednesday.
See, part of my ongoing secret plan is on my next trip to California is to spend about 45 minutes pigeonholing you, Joe, to teach me that I just don't get.
It's the key is the little link at the bottom that says editing help.
Oh, no. If you recall, the last two or three times I've asked you for help, It's been after I've spent hours at editing help and gotten nowhere.
Oh, wow, that is frustrating. Okay, so Doc, but there, Ian brought up projects with regard to IAW, and we mentioned wanting to create some progress for our upcoming events. Are there any action items that came out of that conversation?
I'm sorry, I had to repeat that, Joe. I was distracted by local events. Sorry.
There have been some conversations about what we might do at upcoming events.
Right.
Were there any action items out of that?
Oh, yeah. I would just like to ask people to – I think one thing we'd want to be able to do is for people who are already involved in development efforts or are about to become, like Ian perhaps, is to report on those and whiteboard them and talk about them so we can make some progress with them in ways that we in person in the ways that we can on the phone or just on the wiki.
So I guess actually one thing I want to add here, this isn't related to what you just said, well, or maybe it is get the personal data silo or personal data base started as an initiative. And what that means, frankly, still, I think, Doc, you and I need to figure that out.
Yeah.
For the record, we've been going, I sort of suggested this process, and I think between the public radio initiative and this personal database thing that Ian is willing to step up for, we should use those to flesh out what it really means to move from brainstorming and actually having an initiative that we as a group are supporting. So.
Yeah. Yeah, let's talk on our own about that. I hate to say it. I've got a whole bunch of I've got Kid and Builders and a bunch of other people that are kind of converging on me in my house. So I'm a little bit distracted. Sorry about that.
Yeah, and we are really approaching the end of the call.
Okay,
So Joe, let's just talk later.
Yeah. Good. So I think that's good on the action items. For those of you who were or want to be involved in the website rewrite, I think we're going to have another working meeting next Wednesday this time.
Yes.
Okay, good. So Dean, that was your understanding?
Mm-hmm.
So
I'll put an email out to that effect that will go to the group, and that email will go out either Friday or Monday.
Okay. That sounds good. I think that's mostly a wrap then.
Okay, great.
Super.
Great. All right, well, thanks, everybody. I'd like to see what happened to some of the people we lost. We got down to about three people at the end of the call. So,
well, it's just I actually didn't know whether to allocate an hour and a half. But there's a lot of good meaty stuff here. So I hope to be able to make this time slot, much more frequently.
Excellent. That'd be great.
Super.
All right.
I thank everybody, and I'm going to end the recording in a moment, and. I'll send email out, I'll be speaking with some of you on some separate items during the week, and we'll get together again next time.
Okay.
Super.
So thank you one and all.
Thanks a lot, Dean.
Thanks, everyone.
Take care.
Thanks a lot, everybody. Bye now.